This is Keegan Michael Key.
This is Jordan Peele.
From Key and Peele. This is, what's the podcast called?
It's called Improv Nerd.
That's improv, bitch. Improv, bitch.
I mean, after all, you're nerds.
Improv.
Nerds.
Improv.
Nerds.
Improv.
Nerds.
Hi, I'm Jimmy Corain, and this is a very special episode of Improv Nerd. We were fortunate enough to sit down with Keegan Michael Key and Jordan Peele, the stars of their hit new show on Comedy Central, Key and Peele. This show is not in our usual format, so there's no performance. It was an interview we were lucky enough to conduct in a conference room at Second City. I think you're really going to enjoy this show because we talk passionately about their new show, Key and Peele, and some of the criticisms it's received, their philosophy on comedy. They speak candidly about growing up biracial and the struggles of being their own boss now on that show.
Now, you guys have really great chemistry.
Thank you.
But you never worked together in Chicago, is that right?
No, we didn't.
That's right.
Okay. We didn't work together here. We met here. Didn't work together.
And we're at the Second City, just for people.
We're at the Second City. I was at the ETC, and remember when they used to do the cast swaps with
Chicago.
So the main stage went to the Netherlands, and Jordan's cast came here. We have a mutual friend between us, Becky Drysdale, who writes on our show.
And that was the two white guys.
Two white guys.
Which I loved, yeah.
Which, yeah, that was my first two-man stint. And yes, she writes for us, and she also introduced us.
She built
us up,
to each other.
Not too much, because, everything she said was true. But then, we were just talking. First night we met, we ended up, what was the restaurant?
Clark's.
Over at Clark's.
Off the Belmont Red Line stop.
Awful place.
Right, yeah.
Just nerding out.
Not good food, and it was always like... The service was like there was never a manager working. You always felt like people were coming. Did you feel that?
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I would do interviews there too sometimes with people.
What do you mean interviews?
What's her name? She writes, I can't remember. She was really great and she interviewed me a couple times and she wrote for The Reader. And her name starts with an N and I can't remember it right now. But I'd meet her there a couple times to do interviews. Mm-hmm. But I always said, oh, this is Clark's. This mm-hmm. is where Jordan and I met. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So... when you saw Keegan perform, do you remember the first time you saw him perform?
Yes, it was in, I believe, the second show you did at ETC, because I had missed Holy...
It wasn't Holy War Band.
Curious George Goes to War.
Okay.
Right, so the one I saw, it had the Coach Hines character in it.
Oh, so it was Pants on Fire.
Pants
that was
on
my
fire.
Last show.
Okay, Coach Hines, which of course goes on to Man TV.
Man TV, right.
You know, truly amazing. And, you know, the great thing about Coach Hines is that you know, the character was... Originally, if I recall, it was just one of a bunch of characters in a scene.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That sort of ended up, you know, very clearly over the course of a little bit of time, just becoming the lead.
Yeah.
Sort of stealing the show with just that little game that he had. That was amazing. And then also the thing you did with Pete Gross.
Oh, was amazing. The Flying Jagodowski Brothers.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
It was amazing. But, yeah, I mean, it was... when I had left Chicago a couple of years earlier to do Chicago, he wasn't there yet.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, there was, you know, of course, like, it seems that there are more African-Americans even now than there were back then. But, you know, that was, if for no other reason than the Comedy Crush reason, that was a good connecting mm-hmm. device
yes,
for us.
Yeah.
To sort of
well, you guys, like, because when I started, there was no African-Americans doing it.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what do you think's changed with that?
I've been talking about this a little bit.
We talk about this actually a lot. I'll be honest. I don't know that a lot has changed.
Okay.
I mean, I feel like I see more students mm-hmm. in the training centers and stuff like that. Same thing at UCB and Second City in Los Angeles and even the Groundlings. But to be quite honest, I think right now it's still kind of proportionate to the actual population of the country. Mm-hmm. So, but it's artistic. So then the proportion is even less.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know... maybe it's 15% of the students.
One thing we talk about a lot, we were talking about the other day, is that it's a theory that, you know, African Americans, like everybody, follow your heroes.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I think one thing that might have changed is, you know, there's all, you know, in the past 10 years, Mad TV, SNL have both, you know, sort of broken past the one black person rule.
Right,
so that's
right,
one
right,
thing.
Right, right, right.
And then, you know, that being said, we think that, you know, part of the problem or the reason for it is that, especially with improv, is that, you know, young black improvisers go into hip hop. Mm-hmm. You know, any, I feel like...
Because there's more money in it.
Well, yeah. But also, yeah, and if your mind works that way, you only know to go into music. Mm-hmm. If you want to do... if you're black and you want to do comedy, you do stand-up.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's what you know to do.
So here's the thing, because you guys... I love the show. It's gotten great reviews. But it also hasn't got... It's gotten some criticism. And I want to float this theory to you guys. The Huffington Post said that you make black people the butt of the jokes. Okay. Now, do you take that as a compliment, or do you feel you have to defend it?
We don't take it as a compliment. I feel that we have to defend it, and here's the first thing we'd say, and this is something that Jordan has uttered in the past. What would you have us do? And as we try to answer that question, there's actually a rebuttal, another HuffPost rebuttal, that said, we're done. Now, trust me, we're not in a post-racial world. Mm-hmm. We're in a post-racial racial world.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
It means that we can't ignore it, but we do need to move forward.
Okay.
So when is the day? We're going to try and start doing comedy that's just funny.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sorry, comedy only works when someone's behaving badly. We happen to have melanin in our skin.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're behaving badly for a comic effect to move a scene forward, and we're black, then so be it.
Mm-hmm.
That's your baggage, sir.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when it comes to the guy who wrote the rebuttal, he said, we're moving past that always uplifting. If you're uplifting, go write a nice drama.
Mm-hmm.
Go write The Color Purple too. We're trying to do comedy over here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think now there are times when there are racial linchpins that we can use, and we try to examine them for satirical reasons. But for us, the priority is always comedy. It's always making it... What's the kernel that makes it funny first? And so we just as soon have this show be as colorblind as it can be. So people go, oh, that guy's an idiot, not a black idiot.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
All right, so let me float this theory.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to ask you, Jordan. Do you think... Because they go, what you guys do isn't edgy. Do you think it's because there's this expectation that black comedians, if they're going to talk about race, they have to be angry like Chris Rock or Eddie Murphy or Richard Pryor? You guys have very likable personalities,
right,
and that's who you are. Do you think there's an expectation like they've got to be angry? I've known your work for a long time. You've never been angry.
Well, you know, the thing about the edge, it really is in the eye of the beholder.
Uh-huh.
I find it kind of ironic that we get criticized as being, toothless or edgy in some ways, but then they're the same people who are offended by our material. So what we do, what we're constantly doing is putting ourselves in situations we know we're going to be criticized for. We know that it's more complicated and this is just funny. And we go out on some scary ledges sometimes.
Uh-huh.
You know, we have an entire scene where we play slaves.
Uh-huh.
And it's, I don't know, that's not edgy. I don't know what it is.
Right.
I mean, who does that?
But I saw that sketch, and it's not what it's not what like people are expecting from black comedians.
Right.
Do you think that are talking about race?
That's
you're
right.
Not coming out there. You're both very good actors, and there's this likability, and it's a very well acted sketch.
And I think that's how I define our edge. We like to do something that's different than what's expected of us. And we like to, you know, we like to prove that, as Keegan, you know, puts it so well, black people, not a monolith. There's all sorts of different people. And any time you begin to, you know, generalize or, you know, lump all of us together and say, for any reason, to say that, you know, yeah, you can never make fun of black people or they can never be the butt of a joke, you know, it just starts getting problematic.
I think, like, you know, when you think about Chris Rock has forayed into that place where
uh-huh.
he said, you know, it's he's saying, people say, oh, this dude is just acting like a nigga.
Uh-huh.
And Chris Rock, like, he's not acting like a nigga. He's acting stupid.
Uh-huh.
It wouldn't matter if he was Chinese, if he was Icelandic, if he was fucking from Austria, or if he was from the Bronx. He's acting stupid. Come on, black people. The black people will say, we got to respect our brothers and sisters. Are the same people who say, why are you acting niggerish? Why are you saying that stupid behavior or human ignorant behavior is not black behavior? It's human ignorant behavior. Do you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So I think what we do very often is we try to, the limb, you want edge. Here's the edge. The edge is stop acting like victims, black people. Stop acting like victims. Oh, you're just saying we're supposed to get over it? A little bit. Let's start getting over it. And then that same black person may say to me, but you light-skinned it, so fuck you. Because you ain't got it hard. I ain't got it hard? You're giving me shit right now. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So the fact that's the new edge. If Obama's the president, the new edge is be accountable. That's the new edge. You know what I mean? It's like, how many more scenes do we need to see? Richard Pryor did it perfectly the first time. How many more scenes do we need to see about black people getting over on white people? Mm-hmm. I get it.
Yeah.
That's wish fulfillment. But in the midst of wish fulfillment, here's a new wish fulfillment. Let's pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. And so I hope I get criticism on that. I hope that, and when we see, like, and it's funny, you see young black people, like the people who saw our show last night. A lot of young black people, I think they're already moving past it. Mm-hmm. Now, this Trayvon thing is the most horrible hiccup possible. Mm-hmm. But I think young people are noticing that they still have to be wary. But at the same time, we've got to move. Let's can we just start being humans, please? And stop talking about melanin count? Mm-hmm. That's part of, you know.
Now, you have been said that this show couldn't have got made a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Well, the big thing is Obama, I think. Uh-huh. You know, and I think that, you know, as actors, Keegan and I being biracial, that we've noticed firsthand the perception of African Americans in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
We, you know, we go out for the same sort of roles all the time. And
you and Keegan, or
yeah, Keegan and I. You know, it's, you know, it's just a
well. You're not the same type.
That's funny.
That's exactly.
Is that just because I'm an actor?
I think so. I mean,
I think it is, Jimmy. Yeah,
because your energies are totally different. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's why the chemistry works.
I mean, Hollywood,
a little more phlegmatic. I'm a little more sanguine. And yeah.
Hollywood works, you know, the superficial type first, and then the sort of the content of the comedy second. So as far as Hollywood's concerned, we are probably exactly the same type.
You're brown, same role.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know,
I don't think you could have done Animal Planet. I'm just going to say that right now. I don't think you could have.
I couldn't have pulled it off.
No. I don't think you could have.
Well, and you know, there was Chappelle, and then there was Chocolate News was happening right as Obama was happening.
Uh-huh.
And I remember this distinct feeling of, you know, I feel like that was part of what kind of went wrong with Chocolate News, is that it was sort of in between. It was in this real transitional phase where everything was, you know, it was just a different world than it was yesterday. I mean, remember, you know, the whole notion of, is this a post-race world, all of a sudden came to fruition. I remember, I mean, it wasn't until, I don't think it was even a month before the election, I was still of the mind frame, never going to happen. It's impossible
he's
in this country.
He's not going to win.
If you remember that, Chris Rock did a bit, a few years ago about, you know, I mean, why there can't be a black vice president, right?
I think the president died.
Then the president would get...
A black man would be the president.
Too many assassins or something like that. And, you know, there's... It's just amazing how out of date some of that stuff is in the post-Obama world or the during Obama world. So, yeah, I mean, not only because, you know, doing the Obama bits and the being able to capitalize on that was a huge selling point to Comedy Central, but I think that the world
is shifting. Like more Obama? Is that...
You know, we came in ready to tote that.
Ready to Obama it.
Clearly... With the success that SNL had, of course, a few years ago during the race, you know, we just know it's just fertile ground for comedy. But, you know, the main thing is that there, as far as racial comedy goes, there's a whole new world to be explored now that there is really a biracial dude anywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, besides Lenny Kravitz.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah, but...
But the other thing is that you guys, of the biracial thing, like, and I heard you say it's like for you, it's like been a coming out party for biracial. What prevented you to do more biracial material early on in your careers?
Well, for me, and we have slightly different experiences, mainly because I think, you know, people meet me, I'm a black guy. With Keegan, I think he probably gets more the, you know, what are you? Where are you from?
You get that?
Definitely.
What do people say?
People think I'm Middle Eastern. Some people think I'm a very, very light-skinned Indian, as an East Indian.
Okay.
I've gotten the gamut. I've gotten I've had a person say, you could be Sicilian. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, I guess if you say so, I guess I could be. I'm not.
Right. And then it'll make me feel better if you say Sicilian.
Right,
yeah. You're a person, you know. Please. Yeah.
Sicilian, Sicilian.
Please. Yeah.
But I've gotten, I mean, there's a, you know, in our estimation, and certainly from my own life experience, there's a more amorphous phenomenon taking place here. Yeah.
With Jordan, you just get...
Well, it's assumed that I'm, you know, yeah, 100% black.
Right.
And that, that's, you know, been something that in many situations feels like it works to my favor. You know, it's not confusing. It, especially when we talk about casting, it's like, all right, well, where do we put this biracial guy? I don't know.
Right.
You know, I think the big fear that over time I learned is that to sort of announce or to introduce, I have a white mom. It's not always appreciated mm-hmm. by who you.
Can you explain the shame that is involved in being biracial? Because I'm a white guy,
yeah.
You know, and I don't want to talk that I know it. I know shame very well.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know the shame of what you guys have.
What it's that because we have a white parent, we cannot legitimately or fully experience. Whatever you want to say, and I'll say it in the negative.
Okay.
It's usually the negative, the struggle, the you know, kind of abject, unsolicited hatred, unfairness that we have somehow not had that experience, or that we're not capable of having that experience because of 50% of our DNA, and then at the same time, we will feel, or I can't speak for Jordan, but I think I do speak for Jordan. Mm-hmm. I'll feel a sense of shame that I like the Gin Blossoms more than I like Eric B. and Rakim. So that's what's great. Ben, we're going to go back to the 80s.
Ben, the producer, yes. The producer. Yeah.
So, by the way, racial lines aside, that is a shameful.
Shameful. We'll edit out, you know, Gin Blossoms.
But I mean, that's why when I was in college, I clung to Lenny Kravitz. Because here's an artist, and it's why as a high schooler, I clung to Jimi Hendrix. Here's an African-American man playing music I enjoy. And so I would feel a sense of shame about, oh, I'm supposed to like rap. I'm supposed to enjoy R&B. I'm not a good black person if I don't enjoy these things as fully as other people do.
Now, I've known you for a while. This is the angriest I've ever seen. Do you experience that? It's passion.
Yeah, uh-huh.
But we've never had this conversation.
We haven't.
We've never had this conversation, and I do feel passionately about this.
Uh-huh.
I don't. It goes back to my previous point. Why can't we? You can embrace one of two things if you feel so inclined. Either embrace that we're not a monolith, and
uh-huh.
that we're that our culture is a mosaic,
right?
Or embrace that there's a larger thing that exists in the universe, just known as Homo sapiens,
mm-hmm.
and how we should interact with each other. Period.
Mm-hmm.
Pick your poison, you know. But that to me, that's why I've always been a great admirer of the silent masters.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a huge Burt Williams fan
mm-hmm.
because of the merit of what Burt Williams did as a performer. He happened to be African American.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that shame makes me also say, oh, whew, it's good that I like Burt Williams. That makes me a little bit more legitimate.
Uh-huh.
Why? I guess what I don't comprehend, Jimmy, is what the threat is. What's the threat if I like rock and roll, or more African Americans liked rock and roll? I don't understand what the threat is. Do you think the culture's gonna disappear? I don't know. Part of the passion you're seeing, or the anger, is frustration
mm-hmm.
of not knowing what am I supposed to do. Or as Jordan said, when that guy said the toothless, and they don't like, you know, and the butt of all the jokes are black people. Well, somebody has to be the butt of the joke, and we happen to be black. I don't agree with him that all of the jokes always come down to a black person being punished, which is what I think he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
Because if a black person is the perpetrator and another black person is the recipient or the hero of the scene, well, didn't then one black person also win?
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the real thing is anybody who... the vast majority of people who I think object to comedy about a group are of that group and would laugh at the expense of another group. Yeah. So I tend to not give too much legitimacy to maybe this is a maybe I need to work on this, but I don't give too much legitimacy to people complaining about, oh, now you this one pushed it too far. Brother, I can tell you 5 jokes on other races I know will make you laugh.
That are beyond this.
That are beyond this. But, that might be an assumption, but I
but aren't you guys healing? I mean, first of all, you're saying I'm biracial. We're going to make fun of it on the show because your point of view is very, some sketches are very clear that it's coming from a biracial point of view. Mm-hmm. It's you're acknowledging the shame, which I think there's a lot of comedy in shame.
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I'm sure a lot of people in the biracial community is contacting you, right?
They seem to enjoy the show.
Oh, and you know, and
they feel now unfettered.
Yes.
And I do feel like, you know, the people who do have these problems, it's first of all, I mean, any sketch show has, you know, has its critics. If it's successful, if you're pushing boundaries, it has its critics. And I do feel like, you know, our handfuls of critics out there, they're old fashioned. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not that mentality, I think, will continue to die out. And where the kids are at right now is, it's, you can see, you know, we do these, you know, we do some live shows at colleges and stuff. You can see that the world is changing even from when we were there. Just
lots of things don't concern them.
But you know what I think is interesting? I don't want to give away your age because you're in L.A., but I'm 48. You guys are older. Certainly that watch your demographic.
Sure.
It's pretty cool, isn't it, that your comedy is relevant to this younger generation? Because I can't say that for myself.
Yeah.
We work on it.
I think some of it has to do with research, and I think.
Are you serious? In what way?
And just I mean, trying to stay involved in what young people find interesting. That is interesting to me. Uh-huh. I guess I don't experience it. I don't immerse myself as much as a young person would, but I'm fascinated by what they're interested in. Mm-hmm. But then the other thing is, nobody's heard this story yet.
The
biracial story. Mm-hmm. So if you, I guess it wouldn't matter if I was 48. Mm-hmm. You've not heard this story yet. You only started to hear, you only knew that there was a potential to hear the story 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. When we elected this man to become the most powerful person in the world. That's when the story just began. When someone said, oh, I didn't even know there was a book on this subject. And now I think we're trying to help write this book.
One of our pieces of bread and butter is just, it's got to be new. It's got to be a sketch that you haven't seen before on sketch shows, because I think that's what drives a lot of people crazy about sketch shows. It gets repetitive. And what this terrain that Keegan's talking about is just, it's fertile. And there are so many sketches and thoughts that haven't been explored from this perspective. And so that's another thing we try and do, is write sketches that only he and I could do. And we have an amazing staff of writers who's working around.
Yeah, and I want to talk, we talked about this before you came here with Keegan, is you've got the staff of UCB people. How does the two, and they're very game oriented, how and you guys are more, come from the school of more character stuff, wouldn't you say? Mm-hmm. How do those two mesh? At Second City, it was more, your work was more character.
Oh, definitely. Well, it's because of my training. It's because I was trained as an actor. Uh-huh. So for me, coming from character is how I... Yeah.
And we also have Becky Drysdale, Rich Talarico.
Chicago guy. Becky did the two white guys with you.
But ultimately, I would say it doesn't feel like there is two different schools operating. To me.
Yeah, I think that a lot of what's happening is, to be honest, I think there's been some nice integration. Where very often the characters are serving the game of the scene, mm-hmm. as opposed to a character just existing, just an outrageous character existing simply to exist, mm-hmm. is how I've been experiencing it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what is the UCB influence, if you would say to?
Well, I mean, I think our most popular sketch, mm-hmm. Which is the what we call the bitch sketch, mm-hmm. is a heavy, heavy game scene.
Explain it for people who haven't seen it
yet.
Yeah,
for someone who hasn't seen it, there's two gentlemen who are having a get-together with their wives, and their wives leave the room, and they start casting aspersions on their wives with a certain sense of bravado. And then what happens is, as soon as a guy gets to the point where he's going to say, I told my wife, you're not going to get out of the shower. We're going to be late. And I said, and then he starts to look around to make sure he's in a position where she can't hear him. And then he whispers the word, I said, bitch, don't tell me we're going to be late. But they, then those guys keep moving to places more remote and further away, so they can make sure they can puff their chest out as much as they want and say these words. So you the viewer gets to put together, these guys are complete cowards. These guys are complete cowards, but to each other they keep, you know, saying, you called her a bitch? Yeah, I called her a... Looking around, bitch. And there's no... The character is the scene. Mm-hmm. By what they do, by the comedic game they play in the scene, you realize they're cowards. They don't come on screen going, they're not Barney Fife.
Uh-huh.
Or Mr. Limpet. You know what I mean? They don't start at character. The scene feeds the character, if that makes sense.
Yeah. The interesting thing, though, I do want to make this thing, is that that was you and I that wrote that one. That didn't come from a UCB
source. Yes, which is interesting. It's a perfect example of a UCB scene, and two people who are not UCB people wrote it. But when we hired Ian Roberts, that was part of it. We're like, heavy game is what we seem to do with each other quite a lot. I mean... Mm-hmm.
Just organically.
Oh, yeah. Okay. The Jinx guys from Mad TV, that we played these two characters who, you know, nothing could go right if anything bad luck or untoward happened. They had to do a special dance to break the hex of any kind of bad luck. We kind of slapped the characters on top of that.
Right.
The voices. Sort of, and
Hey, you want to be the high one or the low one?
Yeah, exactly. I'll take the high.
All right.
You know, and so the characters ended up being secondary in that scene. The game of that scene was what was most important.
Now, there was one of our interns, we got a lot of interns on this show, said that Keegan, when you joined Mad TV in the ninth season, is it true that you were originally supposed to replace Jordan?
Can I tell you this? We've done a bunch of interviews.
Okay, let's get the record straight.
Since the first interview, absolute news to me. An absolute revelation to me about 4 months ago.
Because my understanding was you were on the show before Jordan.
Nope, wrong.
No, it was not.
Okay.
He was on the show 6 months before me.
Really?
I was here till December of 2003, and he had started at the beginning of season 9. I came in the middle of season 9. So he started in September of 2003.
Okay, can I?
Yeah.
Let me share the rumor that I got from one of the interns. That you guys had, they were going with the one black quota, which was very popular on Fox back then. And that when you two came together, you had such great chemistry, they said, okay, let's keep them together.
I think that's the perception.
Okay.
Of that, but yeah, really, I think it's very much based on this misconception that there can only be one black guy. I mean, it's so ridiculous that show itself has had two black guys at a time and also had a third black guy.
At
the time.
Yeah.
So I think it's when we got hired in the same season that became the perception.
Profoundly ignorant about the entire thing.
You know,
had no idea that was an idea
Certainly all of us new performers, us starting performers, you know, just like in SNL, there's the heat of I don't perform, I might get tossed. But the narrative of Keegan and I's particular competition is interesting. I feel like if I didn't start writing with Keegan, I might have been in trouble. But I don't think that was necessarily a racial thing at all. I think I just think it was a good decision of mine at the time. Regardless, you know, I wrote a scene with Keegan. I also wrote a scene with Nicole Parker, and there were just two scenes that really cemented my stay on Mad. But that being said, there was never a time where I feel like I was in serious trouble or anything either.
How are you guys? Certainly. How are you making the adjustment from when you were on Mad TV, being just talent, to now being the executive producers?
It's an interesting adjustment. It's significant. First of all, it's a significant adjustment.
Right. Because I'd want to be nice to everybody.
Yeah.
I'm a huge people pleaser.
Yeah.
And you know, when you I think when you come from the improv where we are so trained to listen to everybody's ideas, sometimes we have to say, you know, I'm in charge.
Yeah.
That's the producer is the first job that we've had where saying no is an important part of it.
Is it actually an important part of the job? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I don't know, Jordan, for me, it's been difficult.
What do you find difficult about it?
It's the same thing you just, the same dynamic you just mentioned, Jimmy, is that I'm a people pleaser and I want everyone's ideas to be heard, but I also don't want people to dislike me.
Yes.
I don't want people to dislike me.
Well, you've gotten a lot farther than I have.
But I, you know, but I think, and then there are times.
I can be the asshole though. It works out. It's fine.
But don't you feel though, sometimes don't you get that weird, you go to bed at night and go, this is the direction we want the scene to go in. Is this right? Or should I have listened to the writer?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I
mean, that will keep us awake at night sometimes. Where we go, when we finally get on set, Jimmy, it's too late when we get on set. You've got to shoot. We've got to make our day. So you have to shoot what's there. And you go, well, this was our live by the sword, die by the sword. Maybe the writer was right.
Now, do you call him after you get off the set and go, I think we made a mistake here. Or let's go back to the original. Do you obsess about it? And are you as a team making these decisions?
We're certainly making it
As a team.
As a team. And we have Ian and Ian Roberts and Jay Martell, who are, you know, fantastic producers themselves.
Yeah.
The process of writing seems to be that every sketch takes its own pace. It works at its own pace. Sometimes we come up with an idea and boom, and
it's right there.
The sketch is perfect on paper by an hour because we have the sketch. And then there's other things that it's a great sketch and there's this wonderful nugget here that we want to preserve, but this is feeling too Mad TV. And then it becomes this process and evolve, and then a couple months later we'll have something that looks completely different. The reason I say that is that at this point I think there's no real obsession over individual sketches or bits at this phase. We have a certain amount of faith that with all the brains we have working on it, it's going to work out at the end.
Yeah, each sketch goes through a few filters before we get to pre-production. And then even in pre-production, then we might obsess a little bit over certain things.
Sure,
we'll rehearse them and go, you know what, I felt like this one was right, and I don't know if it's right. But we have carte blanche to do as we please with that sketch. Mm-hmm. So,
and then there are issues that, the producerial issues that we really have never dealt with before, which are things like ratings, demographics.
Oh, yeah. A production design.
Production design.
How much that's going to cost. Schedule.
Do you play the laughter of the audience during the sketches, or don't you? Will that have an effect on the integrity of the show or the amount of people that watch,
that watch
the viewership? These kind of things can be maddening because there's no set-in-stone answer to it.
The prop master coming. Do you want to use an AK-47 or do you want to use a pump-action shotgun for this scene?
Those are the fun ones.
How do you make that decision?
Usually what's interesting, I think... also for the prop master, is that in your mind you saw the movie of the scene in your mind, and you go, no, it's always been a shotgun. It's always been it's always been a shotgun. And that's fun, literally watching what, you know, dendrites and axons and synapses firing in your mind. And then the most beautiful thing, Jimmy, is to show up to a set and going, as if Athena sprung from Zeus's skull, and it's right there. There's Athena standing right there, and it's your set and your location and your props and your concept. It's really, it's intoxicating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Why do you think this relationship works?
Well, one of the reasons is, I think in the creative process, we value, I think, whoever feels, we can sense who... how the other one is feeling at this point about something.
Yeah, we can. You're right.
And like, give me an example.
Very often he never arbitrarily uses the phrase "What do you think, Keegan?" Never arbitrarily. He always knows I'm either holding something back or I'm confused, and he knows it. He just knows
it. Now, why are you holding something back?
Because I'm a people pleaser.
Okay.
I'm a people pleaser. I just don't want to make waves, and my wife and Ian Roberts have both said to me privately, they're like, you can't do that anymore.
Well,
it's Key and Peele. It's not Key helping out Peele. It's Key and Peele. You're the boss, Keegan. You have to voice your opinion. And that's been something I've been trying to do more this season.
Do you think you hide behind him a little? Because that's what I would do.
I do.
Yeah.
I absolutely do.
Yeah.
I absolutely do. I'm terrified of any human being, of all 7 billion of us, not liking me.
Can relate.
And that's irrational. It's wholly irrational.
How do you think? I'm going to ask this question to you. Mm-hmm. How do you think? Because you're immensely talented. You, and I think you're just going to get bigger and bigger. How do you think he has gotten so far being a people pleaser.
Oh, well, let's not underplay people pleaser. I think it's the best thing to be. You know, this is how...
Well, maybe it works in the relationship.
Well, and I would say in the same way, I hide behind him and his
gregariousness.
The classic example is if we're walking somewhere and a group of people come up to me, hey, Kim Peele, blah, 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 I want to talk.
Right.
I might not want to have that conversation at that moment. Yeah. And I can sort of escape.
I am his ninja smoke bomb.
This guy, so he will engage everybody happily and do it. And he's wonderful at it.
Okay,
and he enjoys it.
So, like, when it comes to press, you love it. I mean, you could schedule, you love it.
Oh, I do.
I get the sense you don't like it as much.
But don't get. He doesn't hate it.
No, but I'm saying you really love it. Well, that's part of the job. That's your personality.
Yeah, I'm a good old fashioned Myers Briggs extrovert.
Right.
If we're doing a radio show at 6 a.m, I don't have to necessarily get up. I can just have the phone there.
Does that drive you nuts? We got to be at the studio.
This is one of the things that makes us.
What makes it work is that we understand. Like I said earlier. We understand that I have a sanguine personality that has a phlegmatic personality.
Introvert, extrovert.
It's really all it means.
Okay.
And it's that I derive all the energy for my life from others.
Right.
And Jordan spends a good deal of time. I energize by being with others. He energizes sometimes, most of the time. If you can leave him alone for a minute, he can work it through, and he'll work after hours, and he can be in his home. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what he says to Eileen. He's like, hey, just like over there, just need to be here for a second. Right. Just let me have the cauldron get stirred up, you know.
Not to cut this point off, but I think one of the biggest points about why we get along is we're fans of each other's comedy.
That's what it is.
We make each other laugh. It's just the most fun job in the world.
But I also want to go back to this thing about like you hiding out with Jordan and Jordan hiding, mm-hmm. you hiding behind mm-hmm. Jordan. I think it probably works. Like for the press, it works. And then on set, I would imagine you're tougher than Keegan. Is that true?
I would say so. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I when the director gets annoyed,
uh-huh.
I back down.
Uh-huh.
And I sometimes watch Ian and I go, well, I admire that Ian still has a sense of what we had always talked about the scene being. And he'll go, no, but remember, we said the scene was going to be this.
Well, he's scary.
Well, no.
Are you scared of him?
No,
I swear to God, because I got to perform. I think he's just an immense talent. Just like I'm afraid of Pasquazi, he is really intense.
Yeah, well, Pasquazi's
intense. But the funny thing about Ian is it does take a little while to sort of, I guess, peel away how incredibly, like, loving and
yes.
harmless.
Yes,
he's harmless
yes.
and
because
helpful.
He's a big guy and he's energetic and he's boisterous and he'll...
Well, he's like almost a Marine personality.
Yes, exactly.
A Marine of comedy.
Yes,
you know?
He is.
A sweet, sweet, sweet
yes.
man.
Yeah.
In fact, he and I get along famously. Well, we're both therapy people. We go to therapy and talk about different psychological concepts and what our greatest... We have these really candid conversations about our fears and our and our dreams. And I love Ian Roberts. In that way, in that very personal intra-relationship.
Well, I love... Yes, go on.
Interesting thing is, Jay and Ian are kind of weird, strange doppelgangers
yes.
for myself and Keegan, personality-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Jay and I are a little more similar. Mm-hmm. Keegan and Ian are a little more similar in that, you know, I think Jay and I, just kind of like he said, like we...
Thoughtful.
We have to think in order to talk. And Keegan and Ian are the type of guys who talk to and perform to get to where they're...
Yeah, we have to move and speak
have to get up
and
move and,
to write. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you? We've got to wrap this up because you have a show. What are you loving about your success right now?
I mean, one of the things, you know, we say it a lot, but getting the chance to do it with Keegan,
yeah.
it not only does it make it so much more easy, stress-wise, you know, not to have the whole burden of the show on my back, but also have it on my, you know, favorite sketch performer, you know,
uh-huh.
who if you lack trust in yourself one day, you can just supplement your confidence with your faith in your partner.
Okay, I'm shallow, Jordan. What about the money and the fame?
Oh, yeah, well, that's...
Getting your big billboards with your pictures on it.
Well, it is...
We've never seen one.
On your Facebook you have one.
Yes. We've seen pictures of them.
Pictures that friends of ours have taken of them.
But you've never seen
I've never seen one.
What do you love about the success?
I'm going to disappoint you, Jimmy. The same thing. I work with what I think, in my estimation, is the best sketch writer in the business. And so if I can't come up with an idea, or if I can't crack the nut, I know 100% that he can. Always. He always does it, like when the sun comes up in the morning. And to me, what a great sense of safety.
Are you truly a comedy team?
We are.
Absolutely. Okay.
We are definitely a comedy team.
At this
team.
Point, it is legit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it happened today. I went to Evanston to see my friend, came down here to Corbin to see my friend, and went downtown. People. Mm-hmm. Keegan Peele.
Yeah.
They never say Keegan.
I got a Jordan today.
You did get a Jordan? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's Keegan Peele. You know that guy. Walk past somebody here and go, oh, that's one of the guys from Keegan Peele.
That's part of the problem. One of the parts of the problem, the reason for that is a problem that we have not been very, we have not articulated who is Keegan Peele very well on our
which
show.
Which I think is a subconscious way of saying not super important.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I know I keep it straight. Thank you, Keegan. Thank you, Jordan, for being our guest on Improv Nerd.
Thank you so much.
And continued success for the show. It's on Comedy Central. What night is it on?
Tuesday nights at 10:30.
Tune in.
I just want to say, I don't know if your listeners know this, but okay. I've watched you improvise, and you are one of the most genius improvisers I've seen as well.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Improv.
I want to thank both Keegan Michael Key and Jordan Peele for being our guests. And check out their new show on Comedy Central. It's at 10:30 Eastern Standard Time. And check out Season 2, which will be premiering this fall. You can check us out on Facebook on Improv Nerd. And please, please, please like us. We have like 1,500 Facebooks likes. So the more, the less Prozac I need to take. And if you're thinking about classes, you can go to jimmycorain.com. I want to thank my producer, Ben Caprero, and the good folks here at Second City. And until next time, remember, walk, don't run.
Hello, I'm Dave Ross.
Hey, and I'm Hampton Yunt.
And we host Suicide Buddies on Starburns Audio.
That's right. It's a podcast about suicide, but not to make light of it. We actually talk about suicidal thoughts, depression, kind of with a sense of levity that Dave and I have with each other. He's my best friend. Come on.
Yeah, we're buddies. Suicide Buddies.
That's the title.
One of our favorite episodes that we've recorded so far is about this guy, Jan Pataki, who was a Polish aristocrat in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. And he, one of the reasons it's possible that he killed himself is that he thought he was a werewolf.
Oh.
Check out a clip. It also makes me think, like, we were talking about in the Norway black metal episode, how, like, just the culture of your surroundings can affect you. Like, yeah. He's in a castle in Poland. He's like, I mean, if you lived in a castle in Poland and no one knew anything about anything, you might be like, I'm a bat. I'm probably a bat.
That's like literally what happened to Batman. He literally is in his mansion. He's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat. I'm a bat.
I'm a
bat that helps people.
I'm a bat that helps people.
I'm a rich...
I don't know what you want from me. And my girlfriend, she's a cat. She's a cat.
My girlfriend's a cat.
She steals things. She's a woman who steals things. She's a cat. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat.
I help people.
She's a cat. We fight a penguin.
My